Welcome to our pre-show. This is the BSP only pre-show. You're looking at the Smithsonian channel right now. Not that I got anything against the Smithsonian channel, but I got to get it off of that and get it onto my mug. Otherwise, we're not going to know what we're doing here, man. I mean, I won't even know what I'm doing, you know. So good morning. And I think that's Ernie Pyle. Is that the newspaper report? No, that's an airborne guy. What am I? I think it's a new museum. Well, that's D-Day. You know, you can't, we're losing, let's see, there's 1.8 million World War II veterans left. Now, I understand that there have been other events in history, but there's not been a moment in the history of the world, and when I say moment, it's only 5 years, really, 6 years, there has never been quite such a time, however imperfectly it was achieved, with all of these sub-stories and ancillary and auxiliary stories to tell having to do with the role of African-American soldiers, Asian American soldiers, women, gay people, I understand. But out of World War II sprung all of the movements. A lot of people think that, oh no, that happened in the 60s. Let me clue you in on something, because I was one of those people. The 60s was important. The 60s is when the match was lit, if you will. But the gay movement in America never, ever, ever would have happened had it not been for World War II. Because you had millions, if not hundreds of thousands, anyway, of gay men being brought together in cities, depots, army depots, and embarkation points, etc., around the country on their way off to war, either in the Far East, as they had come through Los Angeles here, or San Francisco, or to Europe. And so you had this sort of small town and big city meeting taking place, and a lot of those folks were gay folks. And look at this. These are cops. This is a museum. They're showing the lunch counter. And exactly what? The banana split was only 39 cents. I'd be fucking sitting down at the white counter too if I were black. You bullshitting me? Say, boy, how come you sitting here? What are you, nuts? 39-cent banana split? Bullshit, it's a buck more down at the colored counter. I'm sitting here. Now wait just a goddamn minute. You know, I don't give a shit. It's not that I want to sit with your fucking white ass, but you guys got better prices. But you all have better fucking prices. I'll tell you what, these guys in the South that sat at lunch counters that marched against those redneck motherfuckers. That's some fucking balls. I don't give a shit what anybody says. That's some goddamn balls. Anyway, look at this. They're pouring shit on people, throwing shit on people. I better not watch this because I'm going to get so fucking angry that I won't have time to do a goddamn radio show. This is what happens to me. A lot of people will say, well, then why don't you talk about these things? I got nothing against talking about these things, you know, but I want to do it in such a way as to be, is to entertain people. I don't think there's any percentage anymore in just soapboxing shit, you know. I don't even want to listen to that shit. I don't give a fuck who it is. I have to be in a certain mood. When you're doing a daily radio show, folks, it's impossible to be outraged by things every single fucking day. It's impossible to be outraged by it. There's only a few people that can do it effectively, and I'm not one of them. And when I say a few people, I think maybe one or two. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know who they are. But you can't be outraged by shit every day. It comes off as very, very disingenuous. You sound like a fucking, you know, you sound like a goddamn chatterbox. What the fuck? You know, you're going to sit there and, today, I'm, you know, you're pissed off at the conservatives every goddamn day. You're pissed off at the liberals every fucking day. You know, every day of your life, you're pissed off at the liberals. You like that? Oh, you should have seen the face on this guy. It's fantastic. Treasures of American History. What a, oh, is that Ron Kovic? Treasures of American History. Who is this? Is this Ron Kovic? I don't know who this is. I believe he's... I don't know. Is he back from Vietnam? This is a guy that they showed a moment ago in a wheelchair as he was attempting to protest something. I don't know what it was, but there he is there. It might be Ron Kovic. I could be wrong, though. I don't know. World Institute on Disability. I mean, was this a disability workshop? Okay, so that's not Ron Kovic. That's just simply a guy that fought the fight for access for disabled people. You know, you and I, man, if you're healthy and you're walking around in this world, you're doing okay. All right. Now, what am I doing? Oh, you motherfucker. You motherfucker. I got a ton of stuff to do today, like I have to do every fucking day. God damn it. Phew. All right. I'm trying to get this over to the military channel. Pain in the ass. Jesus Christ. All right, good morning. I want to remind you, for you Backstage Pass guys, to come over and drop your name here at the thing, at the website, at the little area where it says, you know, check in, check out, but whatever you do, don't check out. No, just go drop your name there, and that way we'll know that you're ready to rock and roll for our one-man show, which is 1 week from last night. So we're just down to six nights now. It'll be Wednesday the 30th. See, what do I have to do between now and then? Write my will, have my shit together. No, it's going to be fun. That much I can get. It'll be fun for me. I hope it's fun for you. And after the show, if you're coming to the show, after the show, remember that we always go out there to the little sort of entryway patio parking lot area there, and we meet people, say hello, sign some autographs if you want, do a lot of pictures. We do a shitpot load of pictures with people, which is great. It's my pleasure to do. And, you know, and then I forget what else I do. Then I go back to the hotel, because generally I'll stay in a hotel in town, even though I'm, you know, live in the area. But I don't want to drive all the fucking way back to the beach at night, because I'm scared and I may have had, I don't know, perhaps a cocktail. So I will have someone transport my drunken, slovenly ass back to the hotel, and it is there that I will then repose, raiding the minibar, watching late night. I don't know, but that's not important. Why am I even telling you that? Although I may be in the bar there. Maybe that's what we should do. See, after the show, meet me at the bar at the XYZ Hotel. I'll be there. You be there. Let's talk. I'll just sit, I'll listen to you if you want me to. Whatever you'd like me to do. And that will be a gas and a half, my fine feathered friends. So I got into this whole Twitter thing last night with some... I got this whole new thing. I don't know where it came from, but every time I see someone's profile picture or I see a collection of superhero comic-type images on someone's Twitter or Facebook account that they use for a profile pic, why is it that I think that they're disabled? Well, the reason why is I think that maybe they're trying to project a bigger image of themselves, or a more gonzo, or frankly, a more favorable impression of themselves than they would like to than is ordinarily projected. Think about it. Even if it's the most grotesque thing, even if someone uses as their profile picture just a grotesque image of some kind that is bound to offend, or to even those people are looking to project an image that has power and that has influence and motivates and moves and affects the people seeing it. So in other words, they're trying to do what they cannot do in their real life. Make sense? I think it does. Because they're generally anonymous. So they're anonymous. If they were using their real name with those images, then people who knew them would say, "Well, what is all this? That's not who you are. Why are you doing that? That's contrary. That's opposed to your real nature." And they'd get called out, and probably more to the point, their life would be affected somehow. They'd be fired, or they would be, you know. So they use these images in conjunction with a fictitious name. So they've created, well, all right, that much we know. But what is that image saying? It's saying that I have the ability to, and I will, whether you like it or not, I will connect with you somehow. I'm going to make a connection with you. I'm going to make you think about me. I'm going to make you be aware of me. Right? So that's naturally something that they are unable to do in their real lives. That's why you draw the conclusion that so many of those people are really powerless people in their own world. Now, you and I may not recognize that. You and I may see them in their jobs and think, well, that's a pretty decent job. I mean, they've got some pretty decent work that they do, and they have, they look, you know, for all the world, they look normal. But for them, inside of them, they are not. They're not making it. They're not where they should be. They're not being paid attention to. They're not the people that they want to be, you know. So the reason why I say all this is we got into this Twitter fight yesterday, or Twitter fight. I started to bait this one guy because it was in conjunction with my friend Barry Louise, who had very rightfully so pointed out the fact that Hamas firing rockets from heavily civilian populated areas is showing a kind of a cowardice, which is maybe not so much cowardice as it's very calculated thinking on their part to propagandize properly this battle they have with the Israeli state, because Hamas knows they cannot win a military fight with the Israelis. They understand that, but they can win the propaganda war, and the propaganda war is won by the following thing: a major military push that can demoralize your opponent into believing he can't win. The Nazis tried it in World War II with the Ardennes Offensive, otherwise known as the Battle of the Bulge. It didn't work. It didn't work because they just couldn't sustain it. The North Vietnamese tried it in Vietnam with the Tet Offensive in January of 1968. It did work. It demoralized the U.S. population even more so than it already was. You understand that the American people were already on the tipping point with the Vietnam War, with the Tet Offensive, which was an offensive to show the opposing force that we still got the juice, we can strike where we want, we can kill where we want. And this was militarily a failure for the North Vietnamese, but that's not the point, because they were defeated essentially everywhere they attacked, with particular attention paid to Hue City, which was the Battle of Hue, very famous in the history of Vietnam, that the Marines retook from the North Vietnamese with only a few hundred Marines. All right, so then you have, for instance, the recent offensive in Iraq. That also may prove to be a winner, because again, the insurgents in Iraq know they can't win. But they can, with one big push, using all their reserves, using all the weapons they have, they can create an impression that they're winning, and that demoralizes the enemy into thinking, there's no way we're going to win this thing, let's pull out. It's a very time-tested, time-honored, at least over the last 100 years, tactic that can win. And as we mentioned in the event of the Tet Offensive, won brilliantly. Now, did I think of all this shit? No. I got all of this by reading George Friedman at Stratford. All right. Actually, I did. And what they write over there and what Friedman writes makes a lot of sense. So, I don't know. If you want to keep fucking around watching CNN and watching Fox and pulling your dick to all that shit, go ahead, man. You know, be my fucking guest. If you want to know what the fuck is going on, you got to subscribe to a site like Stratfor. You got to read Debka. You got to read some of these other, you know, Debka. I got to tell you something. Debka got a little bit of a black eye in predicting some terrorist event for New York City that never happened, and it got a lot of people upset with them. But I got to tell you, I think that what they did wrong wasn't so much making that prediction, or at least filtering that intelligence, is going big with it the way they did. You know, this is going to happen. And I think they probably shouldn't have done that, you know, because there's people that are capable of doing that. I mean, for their business. Who the fuck knows? I'm looking at some of the most ghoulish images. I don't know what this is. Are these mummies or something? It's unbelievable on American Hero Channel, the former military channel. That's the American Heroes Channel Canada? No channel. All right, so there's that. And what I want to do now, take a look at the time. Take a look at the time. Take a look at the time. 8:47, that's Pacific time. I'm going to get over here to my news feed and see what's up. I've been tweeting a bunch of smart-ass shit this morning, which I probably shouldn't have, but Jimmy Pardo, good man. I also tweeted a thing about this guy, Joseph Wood. It took 2 hours for him to die. So I wrote, no shit, it took that piece of shit 2 hours to die, huh? Oh, well. Something like that, I don't know. And other smart-ass bullshit. Now I'm just looking for the news here. I like this picture. This I like. This is one that I like. Try to find here is the Twitter feed. I always like to get my news off of Twitter. Twitter is a great news source for me. I don't know about anybody else, but it really is. It's just, I always find really cool stories there. Shit that I'm interested in. I guess that's why it's my Twitter feed and nobody else's. The hell are you saying here? There's Allison Reynolds. She's a photographer, nice lady. She took those original pictures of me. I don't know if anybody of you guys saw the pictures of me, you know, the model shots that I, you know, way back in the day. I could pull one up here if you'll pardon the expression, but I just don't have the time. That's Allison. She is married to Joel Berliner, and very nice people, super nice people, and she's a good buddy. And I'm sorry, Allison, I missed your birthday party. I can't fucking, you know, I've been so goddamn busy. And again, it takes me 8 million years to get into town. There's Stratfor. This is a fantastic site. They just got it going on, man. Mark Maron, good man. Really, really good man. Good guy. Deserves all the success he has. He's truly a sweet guy, and appreciate very much what he's done for me. Christine Blackburn, great gal from Pittsburgh. Christine is a television host, actress. She's done a lot. I met her originally at a Christmas party for Premiere years ago, and Christine is a comic now, as well as doing her thing. Wait a minute. Oh, this is her Storyworthy podcast. Hannes Finnis is her partner, and I've been on that a couple times. She has a lot of people on that. And Layla here, Channel 7 from San Francisco. Nice lady. She is the morning traffic reporter there and feature reporter at ABC 7 in San Francisco. Open your golden gate. Mm-mm-mm-mm. Andy Richter, funny as fuck. One of the funniest guys in the world. Truly is a funny man. And this is a guy, Andy would be fantastic with his own show. His own talk show. He's been Conan's sidekick, he's just a cat that if you let this guy, if you turn this guy loose, I think he's a metal case. Although here's Guy Endor Kaiser. This is one of the funniest fucking writers. This guy rarely has a bad tweet, in my opinion. See, he writes for the Millers. It's absolutely horrifying that Arizona took 2 hours to put a man to death. Silver lining, he no longer has to live in Arizona. If Ray Rice's wife had been smoking a joint when he knocked her out, the NFL would have immediately elected him to the Hall of Fame. Yeah, because it's a heavier penalty for smoking weed, because it affects your performance. Beating up your wife doesn't affect your performance on the field. See, that's all I give a shit about. Here's my smart-ass tweet. No kidding, that piece of shit took 2 hours to die. Damn. Do you even know who this Jimmy Pardo is anymore? That's Andy talking to Jimmy Pardo. Says, I play a guy named Jimmy Pardo, but not myself, on tonight's episode of Marin. And some guys named Conan, Andy Richter, are also in it. Guy Under Kaiser, Alice Carboni. Alice is a writer and a good one. Really good writer. Interviewed me for her blog. She does one called Coffee with Alice. And she she's hustling, man. She's from Italy. Just to tell you a little bit about Alice, you guys should check out her blog. She's an Italian, now relocated to the United States. And America is her adopted country. She loves this country. She's applied for, I believe she now has her green card and is resident here, eventually, I think, working toward perhaps citizenship. I'm not exactly sure what Alice's plans are, but she's an interesting woman in that she is looking at America through the eyes of an Italian. But I said to her, I said, you know, the immigrant thing has been done a lot of times in America, but, you know, it's constantly a really good story if you can find your voice. She's found her voice. What I mean is, if you can find a way into the minds of the reader with a new look at this immigrant thing, you know, that none of us, I mean, few of us Americans, we don't know what the fuck that is. And we prove that with our big, fat, stupid mouths just about every day when we open our yaps and talk about immigrants. We wouldn't know if the immigrant experience. I don't give a flying fuck if you're mammy and daddy, you know. My parents come from another fucking country too, okay? They come from Canada. Now watch all the fucking bigots and assholes come out of the woodwork when I say to them, my parents are immigrants. Where are they from, Phil? Canada. Ah, ha, ha, ha. So, you know, the people that oppose the registering of and the documenting of and the organizing of, and let's get a fucking handle on this goddamn thing that's happening right now before we just pack everybody into a fucking boxcar and ship their fucking ass back to Mexico or Canada or wherever the fuck they're from. They don't want to do any of that, man. Just guns at the border. And of course, as a propaganda propaganda ploy, you can take that and make that look any way you want. So they're not very intelligent people. They're not very intelligent people. They're going to lose that fucking fight before they're even out of their goddamn pickup trucks, because that is a picture that goes around the fucking world. And you may say, well, I don't give a shit what the rest of the world thinks of me. You have to give a shit, motherfucker. Are you trying to get people on your side? If you're trying to get people to understand what it is you want to say, unless you are populated with just brain-dead fucking idiots who are going to go down with the ship, who will, you can't pry my gun out of my hands. So in other words, what that means is you want to be a body laying under a tarp as the cop walks by checking you off his fucking list. That's what you are populating your movement with. A bunch of assholes that want to be one more body laying under a fucking tarp of about, 20 of them that nobody gives a fuck about, because they were all a bunch of terrorist, asshole, militia motherfuckers. No one knows their story. And then after the fact, there'll be a whole bunch of assholes that go on TV shows to try to get their story out and tell their story right, when they could have told their story properly had they been thinking clearly during the lead-up to this thing. But no, they want to have the big gun battle. And they think that they will live forever. Really? Anybody know the name Timothy McVeigh other than the usual weird fucking basement-dwelling freaks that would know his name? Does anybody really give a fuck about Timothy McVeigh? Really? The answer to that question is a resounding fuck no. Other than the handful of dickheads that probably, once a year light a candle to his ass and worship him someplace in some fucking alley someplace, right? That's it. Anybody know these names? No one gives a shit. No one gives it. No one wants that kind of an America. No one wants that fucking America. You may think that they do, because when you sit around in the barn with all the other fucking farmers and you talk about how this country's going to hell in a handcart because there aren't enough fucking white people around, and not enough fucking black people and dark-skinned people to carry that fucking bale of hay over there, and you may think that everybody feels that way, and yeah, you're going to go out. And you find out that really it's just a big, really loud group of maybe, 1,000 of your friends, and that's it. So there.
I think everything you're saying, Phil, now here's where we go into comedy mode. How are you going to turn this into laughs?
I'm just going to. That's all there is to it. I'm going to turn it into laughs, and I don't give a flying fuck who knows. I don't give a flying fuck. I'm going to turn it into laughs even if no one laughs. But this is the shit. This is the prep. This is the prep period. So the shit that I say here during this prep period, during this BSP pre-show, is the prep. Ork. Pardon me. Pardon me. La-di-di-di-di-di. There's a whole lot of mummy shit on TV right now on American Hero Channel, but I don't want to be it on the Smithsonian. Both channels have very disturbing things on it. Maybe I should go back to Fox and CNN. I'll go back to Fox and CNN. I'm going to kill somebody. I'm going to kill you. All right, you ready? Here we go. Time now to leave the pre-show. And now we are on our tune in and our listen live line, and I wonder if that makes any sense to anybody,
Well, what do you mean?
I wonder if saying that we're on tune in, listen live, all that bullshit makes any sense to anybody. I don't know. So,
well, what do you mean makes, you're the one that's speaking the language, Phil, if it doesn't make any sense. And when you say the Twitter,
you talk about listen live, not Twitter.
Well, that's what so what's the difference?
Listen Live is the feature, is the area of our... Never mind. I got to get to the...
You don't, Phil, you've got a whole minute, and I'd like you to explain this, because this is something that a great many of us do from time to time, sit around and discuss. I was talking to Mary Bosafit.
Talk about Mary Jehoshaphat.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Robert. Mary Jehoshaphat and I, we were talking at... What are you looking at?
I'm not looking at anything. I'm listening. What is it with you every time you think?
I don't think anything, Phil. You're staring at my breasts, all right?
God, Mr. Henry!
No, I am not. I was looking at you, looking at your necklace, looking back at you. It's a normal thing for the eyes to do.
Well, I didn't see it, thank you very much. It looked to me like you were scoping my tits out, to put it in the words that you people would...
I gotta start the show. All right, we'll be right back to, we won't be right back to jack shit. Good morning and welcome, world-famous Phil Henry Show. Well, wait a minute. What? Bud, I'm gonna kill you, man.
I forgot to clear it out. I forgot to clear the cachet out.
It's like this big cacophonous noise, man.